This Lent proceeds in a very deliberate way towards the crucifixion, the death and crucifixion of Jesus. And what the church is trying to do here in these readings is to show us different aspects of what's going on as each Sunday we get closer and closer to Calvary. So I want you to think back as to where we were last Sunday. The last Sunday, the gospel was a gospel in which we heard Jesus going into the desert. And if you remember the three temptations that he was tempted with, the temptation to fill his belly, because he was hungry. So it's the temptation to pleasure. The temptation to take a shortcut and not have to go through the hardship of life. Remember when Satan takes him up to the top of the temple, and not to a high mountain, and he shows all the kingdoms of the world. And he says, all of these I will give you. The temptation to possessions, to everything, because Jesus came to reclaim humanity from the grip of our destroyed and disconnected state. Always remember, this is something that is always I'm very, very aware of, and I've said this to you before, but I just want to recall it, that the word religion, re, do it again, and ligar, means to connect. And so religion is actually reconnect. And always remember that that implies that we are in a disconnected state. Now, disconnected from what? We are disconnected from the God who gave us the reason for our existence. And that's why we all wander around looking. Sometimes you hear people say, oh, I'm still looking for myself. What happened? Did you lose yourself? Yeah, you did. Because in effect, what's happening is we are born disconnected from our origin, from our purpose. And so religion is to reconnect. So Jesus came into this world literally to reconnect, to reclaim human beings back to the pre-fall state that we would share what God had for us. And Satan was saying, you can have this all, but you don't have to go through all the problems in the world. Just bow down and worship me, and I will give all of them because they're mine. Whenever I talk about this, I always remember a martyr a Christian martyr. He was a Lutheran pastor whose name now I just went blank, but it'll come to me in a minute. And he was executed by Hitler. And he was executed, and he wrote a book in which he talked about cheap grace. And cheap grace is grace that doesn't cause you any problems. You just get, the devil was offering that to Jesus. He was saying to Jesus, here it is. Here it is, all that you came to do, and you don't have to go through anything, any problems. Just worship me one time, and I'll give it all to you. Okay? And so, that's the second temptation. And then the third temptation, of course, is throw yourself off from the temple and impress everybody. And everybody, don't you want everybody to ultimately believe that you are the Son of God? Well, if you want everybody to believe that you're the Son of God, just let me take you to the temple, throw yourself off, and the Bible says your feet will not strike against the stone. And as you're carried up by angels, everybody will look at you and say, wow, there's the Son of God. And so notice the temptations from last week. Now, this is a very fine line that Jesus is walking, because the temptations are, you don't have to go through the suffering of the crucifixion, death, and then the resurrection. And Jesus knows that that's the path that he has to go through. Now, here we are in this week. Now he takes three disciples, Peter, James, and John. Now, this is just a few weeks before he is crucified. And why is he doing this now? Because he knows that what is going to happen to him is going to shake their faith to the bone. To the bone. And so he wants to give them something to hold on to. Because when things get really bad, it's those moments that God gives you in which you experience his presence, that when you remember them, that's what keeps you going through the tough times. And so he takes Peter, James, and John up the mountain. And let me tell you, this mountain, what was it, Mount Hebron? Tabor, Mount Tabor. And Mount Tabor, I was talking to Scott right here, one of our parishioners who went to the Holy Land. And he was talking last week at Bible study, and he was saying that I've never been to the Holy Land, but you're driving along and all of a sudden everything is flat, and all of a sudden you see this humongous mountain come out, Mount Tabor. And this is not just a little, hill. And I was reading up on it, and it's a tough climb. They were National Geographic that I was reading, it was saying it would take at least a 2-day climb on foot to go up Mount Tabor. And so when Jesus takes up these three disciples to Mount Tabor, they have to go through a lot. And this was not, again, cheap grace. He had to go up there. He is transfigured before them. Now, what happens in the transfiguration? He shows himself the way he is. He is not just Jesus, a human being, because the rest of the time he is walking with them, he just looks like any other guy. Except that he does things that are slightly unusual, like miracles. And now, when they look at him, he is raised in the middle of the air, and on either side of him are Moses and Elijah. And the gospel writer, it's interesting because the gospel writer says in this today, he says that, and his clothes became white as light, more clear and lucent than they could ever been done by a fuller. In other words, so white that it actually almost blinded you. They were so white. And what's going on is Peter is so overwhelmed by this vision, because Jesus is revealing himself, and he's basically saying to them, look, when it comes time, and they don't understand it yet, when you come time, remember this, because this will keep your faith in me going into the future. But what's interesting is really not what, it's what's not in the gospel today, which continues. As soon as Jesus gets down from Mount Tabor, he says to the apostles, now let us go to Jerusalem. Let us go to Jerusalem, where I will be kidnapped, I will be arrested, I will be tortured, and I will be put to death, and the Son of Man will rise on the third day. Now, as I think I've said this to you before, but I'm always amazed by it. What would a normal person say to a person that was saying, I'm going to go to Target And at Target, after I leave Target, I'm going to get kidnapped. And they're going to torture me and kill me. If I told you that, would most of you, anyway, not say, Father, don't go there? I think that's a normal thing to do. So what does Peter do? Peter says, oh, Lord, may that not happen to you. Now, instead of, this always amazes me, instead of Jesus turning around to Peter and saying, Peter, thank you so much. You're such a wonderful guy to not want anything bad to happen to me. What does Jesus say to him? Get behind me, Satan. Why? Because that's exactly the temptation that Satan had given him in the desert. You don't have to go through this. And now that it's getting close, the temptation is much more tempting because it's right in front of him. And the last thing that always gets to me is the sentence when Jesus, right after he says, get thee behind me, Satan, Jesus immediately says, you are thinking like man does, not like God. Now think about that. If Peter's response was normal for us, may that not happen to you, Lord. If that's what we would say, and Jesus says, you are thinking like man does and not like God, what does that say about what we consider normal thinking? That normal thinking is not necessarily always normal in the eyes of God. Because Jesus knew that the Father had different priorities, and his safety and his enjoyment of life were not totally at the top. Periodically I get a sad kick out of people when I talk about suffering and stuff like that. I get people who say, well, doesn't God want me to be happy? And you know what the answer is? Yes and no. Yes and no. He wants you to be happy, but not the way you want to be happy. Not that way. I always imagine Jesus, you know, at the Garden of Gethsemane, right before he gets arrested, and praying to his Father and just saying, Father, but I just want to be happy. Well, that would have been normal, right? Father, I just want to be happy. And what the Father's saying, I don't want you to be sad, but you've got to go through with it. I don't want it to happen, but let it happen. Let it happen. Because what you cannot do, Jesus, you cannot allow the power of evil to bully the Son of God into fear, into such fear that you run away. I don't want it to happen, but neither can you run. Let it happen, because I will be there and I will not allow it to stand. And so what's happening in the gospel today with this, the Feast of the Transfiguration, is Jesus is strengthening them, because as soon as they go down from the mountain into the bottom, Jesus is going to say, now is the hour. Now I go to Jerusalem. And that's what's going to happen. Over the next few weeks, Jesus will be making his way to Jerusalem until Passion Sunday. And then after Passion Sunday, Easter Sunday. This Lent is a long road watching Jesus go. And during Lent, I want you to notice one thing. I want you to notice that Jesus is not your classical victim. He's not a victim that gets ambushed and then killed. This is a man who goes to the place that he's going to be arrested at. He goes there. He goes right to the place where he's going to be arrested at. Then he has a supper with his disciples the night before he gets arrested. And during the supper, he turns to the guy who's going to betray him and say, go do what you have to do. Now, this is not a man who's running away. Go do what you have to do. Then, have you ever asked yourself the question, how did Judas know where to find him? Because that's where they always went. So why didn't Jesus go to a different place? Because he was not trying to run away. He was facing it. Even though he didn't want him to. God didn't want him to face it. He was willing to face it. And he got arrested. And Jesus allows it to happen. And he says to Pilate, if I wanted to, I could have legions of angels defending me. Who's in charge here? Jesus is. He is in charge. He's not out of control. He's walking. The way I have come to understand it is that this is a divine booby trap. Or shall we call it a divine sting operation? Because Satan thinks that he's getting Jesus in his clutches. And it's almost like Jesus is the bait. And he allows himself to be arrested and killed. And Satan thinks he's got him in his clutches. And the moment Satan kills him, what happens? The explosion of grace. The very moment of Satan thinking that he was stomping on Jesus is the moment that he stomps on him, is the moment that the capsule of God's grace just goes and it breaks open with the salvation of humankind. And so we keep going week by Sunday by Sunday and follow the Lord and watch him and make sure you see this is a man with a plan. This is a man who is not a victim. This is a man who is going to face basically what I still think is a divine sting operation to make sure that our salvation goes through. God bless.